From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. In late August, after a year of resistance and opposition, the Postal Service finally relented and started its request for a Postal Regulatory Commission advisory opinion on the so-called Delivering for America plan. On September 5th, the United States Postal Service hosted a Zoom-based pre-filing meeting related to its anticipated request to the Postal Regulatory Commission. During the virtual meeting, interested parties heard the Postal Service's pitch in favor of the Delivering for America plan and were able to pose questions to Postal Headquarters staff. The next step will be the formal Postal Service filing for the opinion to the Postal Regulatory Commission, followed by potential cross-examination by postal stakeholders and comments by the parties. Once the formal Postal Service request is actually filed, the Postal Service may implement its desired changes after 90 days, or it may amend those changes based on the comments made by stakeholders or the Postal Regulatory Commission's advisory opinion, which is just that, advisory. Let's now turn to our honored guest on this edition of Naps Chat, Congressman Garrett Graves. Representative Graves represents the 6th District of Louisiana, which encompasses much of the southeast portion of the state, including Baton Rouge and the Bayou region of the state. The congressman serves on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, as well as the Committee on Natural Resources. The issue that animates many Naps Chat listeners is Representative Graves's championing repeal of the Social Security windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset, also known as GPO-WEP. Representative Graves and Representative Abigail Spanberger of Virginia introduced H.R. 82, the Social Security Fairness Act, in January 2023. Thus far, H.R. 82 has earned the co-sponsorship of 325 of their colleagues, almost three-quarters of the House of Representatives. This legislation has been one of the National Association of Postal Supervisors' legislative priorities this past year. As listeners know, NAPS collaborates with NARF, National Association of Retired Federal Employees, on this issue. On a side note, because of new congressional district lines, Representative Graves will be departing the House at the end of this year, which is unfortunate. Thanks for visiting NAPS Chat, Representative Graves.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Let me ask you the first question, which is why you chose to become a leader in the fight to repeal windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset.
Well, Bob, first of all, I've had a chance to work in federal government, work in state government, and work very closely with a lot of our local government officials and working side by side, seeing the intensity that these folks often work, particularly in things like disasters, hurricanes, my home state of Louisiana, knowing the importance of some of these critical careers or occupations, like working as a police officer, working as a teacher, and seeing these people, first of all, overworked, underpaid, but then on top of it, adding insult to injury, is having their Social Security benefits cut whenever they go to retire, in many cases, unbeknownst to them. This just really was an unjust law or policy that that we felt really needed more attention and needed to be addressed by Congress and stop this 40-plus years of stealing from some of our public employees.
Yeah, the irony is that when I started my work on Capitol Hill as a young staff member, that was about the time that this whole initiative to repeal windfall elimination provision in the government pension offset started. Do you know about how many Americans are impacted by the WEP and the GPO?
Well, impacted, let's define that as family members. And when you put it that way, it easily exceeds, I think, 6 million people. If you look directly at the number of folks that have been impacted. The data that we have is a few years old, but it indicated that there were about 750,000 people that were affected by government pension offset, and over 2 million that were impacted, that are impacted by windfall elimination. And so look, let me say it again, that doesn't include other dependents. It doesn't include some of the prospective folks that will be coming online and moving toward retirement. But, you know, Bob, the penalty that occurs here in some cases effectively eliminates Social Security benefits. And the worst part about it is that we have people call our office all the time that were not aware that this penalty was going to kick in, and even had Social Security prediction statements showing that they were going to make a certain amount of money or be able to draw a certain amount of money from Social Security when they hit retirement age, only a few months later to go and retire, to find out that statement was entirely inaccurate.
One of our former national presidents, who is a retired postal employee, who was actually a constituent of yours, Lewis Atkins, is impacted by this provision, as well as his wife, Benita Atkins, who is an officer in our auxiliary. So, I mean, this goes across the board. As you said, it's federal employees, it's state and local employees, it's postal employees.
Yeah, it really is incredible. And then the other thing, you know, just again, adding insult to injury to insult to injury, is that you could have a situation where a spouse or widow is impacted, and once again, unbeknownst to them, expecting that they were going to be able to draw the Social Security benefits of their spouse, have a death or some other type of situation where they end up getting a cut or reduction in benefits as a result of their spouse's employment. So, I mean, just really incredible how broad the reach is. And as I mentioned, just under 3 million current retirees, but millions and millions of others that are in the pipeline that are moving toward working toward retirement.
Now, I know that you weren't a member of the House of Representatives at the point at which the WEP and GPO were enacted, but what was the reason behind these two discriminatory laws?
Well, you're right, and I was out of diapers, but not too far out when I think some of these changes were made, and it's my understanding that this was done late 1970s, early 1980s, and it was done as an effort to try to correct what was believed to be an overcompensation for folks that might have been drawing both Social Security and public pensions, but there is no doubt that the quote fix that was put in place was a significant overcorrection or overcompensation that has resulted in tens of billions of dollars in Social Security benefits that have been redirected, stolen, embezzled, whatever term you want to use, from these retirees, and it's really just unjust what has happened to these folks. And, you know, I'll say it again, Bob, you have someone who's approaching retirement, has done all their due diligence and calculated how much it's going to cost to retire and when they can do it. And the number of people that I've spoken to that did exactly what they were going to do in due diligence, only to find out after they quit their job and that job was given to someone else, find out that they had to go back to work because of the cuts resulting from windfall elimination or government pension offset.
Since these two provisions seemingly impact public employees, whether they be state, local, federal, thereabouts, do you think at the time that the legislation was enacted there was some type of antipathy towards public employees and that resulted in the adverse impact against them?
Well, look, anything I say on this would be complete speculation, but I certainly could have, just spending time in Congress, I certainly could imagine a scenario where folks felt, oh, well, these people have been overcompensated for a period of time, so now let's come in and swing the pendulum back. But clearly there was no anticipation or folks made a major error in not thinking about the fact that there were going to be some prospective folks that had never enjoyed overcompensation or any allegation of such. And so this is just awful. You know, I mean, look, if I were doing this as a private company with our company pension, I could go to jail for embezzling. And the fact that Congress believes that this is just part of budgeting, or at least Congress did 4+ decades ago, that really is irrational. And this is something that really needs to be fixed, needs to be on the front burner. And we've got to restore justice to these people that have, and fair treatment to these people that have worked and paid into the system.
Now, I know that you've been invited by the Ways and Means Committee to sit in on some of the hearings on repealing WEPGPO, H.R. 82. And I'm just curious if there are any specific cases or stories about the impact on individuals that really struck a chord with you.
Well, look, I mean, whether it was the hearing that we had in Louisiana and Baton Rouge, where we had, I believe the committee said, more testimony submitted on that bill than any other bill they had ever had a hearing on. And this was a field hearing, which normally doesn't get the attention of the Washington, D.C. based hearings. And in going through some of that testimony and talking to some of the people that were in the audience, the scenarios where, as I mentioned earlier, people retired with an understanding that they were going to be able to make ends meet, be able to make their mortgage payment, be able to afford their prescriptions, only to quit their job, have the retirement party, weeks later to realize that their Social Security benefits were a fraction of what they anticipated. And these people immediately had to go back to their employers and try and claim their jobs back. And of course, the people that I talked to and the testimony that I read indicated that those jobs had already been awarded to someone else. And so these folks have to go find entirely new jobs. And I remember one of them even mentioned that they became a Walmart greeter. In other cases, people telling these just horrific stories about doing all their due diligence, doing the math, and then not being able to afford their mortgage payments, losing or having to sell their house that in some cases had been in the family for generations. I mean, the stories are absolutely heartbreaking. Had one woman who came and spoke to us about her husband who was required full-time care, and she was the caregiver, and that as a result of the cuts that were happening, she was unable to afford to be able to take care of him, the medicines and the other things that were required. I mean, just absolutely disrespectful, horrific stories. And I can't think of another word, and you sort of alluded to this earlier, other than these folks are discriminated against. And look, we're not asking, you know, and I could easily make a case and say, well, look, you got to pay these people back for all 40 years of the money that you took from it. We're not asking for that. We're asking for a prospective fix, meaning that next Social Security check will be restored to the appropriate level. And I think that is way more than fair. And still getting some headwinds or pushback. But Bob, I also have to do a little bit of a victory dance or an end zone dance here and say that it is remarkable that we have become the second most co-sponsored bill in all of Congress with over 10,000 pieces of legislation introduced, and just the education, the advocacy, and the great network of folks like you that have been out there helping to share this story has just been incredible.
Yeah, we'll get into the discharge petition in a couple of minutes, but I'll tell you that we have been engaged in this in posting to our website and enacting our grassroots, and I believe we've had almost over 1,000 messages being sent over the past 2 weeks to members of Congress.
Wow.
In support of the discharge, signing on to your discharge petition. But before we get to that, the battle to repeal GPO and WEP has been waged for decades, and you know that. Why has it been so difficult to solve the issue?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, look, there are always folks on the other side of issues. And in this case, you can go back and look at the hearing that was held in Washington, D.C. on our bill. And they had witnesses who came and testified mostly against the bill. And of course, their opposition was based upon the fact that it was going to cost a lot of money to restore these benefits. And you know what? They're right. It is. But the thing that you've got to keep in mind is that this is their money, meaning this is the retiree's money. This is that teacher's money. This is that police officer's money. They paid into the system. We're not asking them to be treated any better than anyone else. We're asking them to be treated the same, to be treated fairly. So, yes, it's going to cost increased dollars to pay the people what they were actually due. But let me say it again. You've been stealing this money for decades, and we have not asked for the retroactive payment of the tens of billions that you've stolen in order to artificially prop up the solvency or the financial health of the Social Security Trust Fund. And so the opposition is based upon cost. And here's the story. The Social Security Trust Fund today is projected to become insolvent or become heading in the red by around 2034 or 2035. And folks are saying, well, wait a minute, if you do this, if you pay these people what is owed to them, if you pay them their rightful amount, then you're going to cause increased expenditures out of the Social Security program, which you're right, you will. But it's not going to have a drastic effect on when the trust fund becomes insolvent. Congress, no matter what, Congress must address the insolvency issue, meaning addressing the ratio of folks paying in versus folks taking benefits address the financial health of the Social Security Trust Fund. That's got to be addressed no matter what. And so whether you have to do it make up dates, but by November of 2034 or by June of 2035, the reality is that doesn't matter in the overall scale that we're talking about here. The trust fund's got to be addressed. The health, the solvency does, no matter what. And this doesn't have a big effect on when exactly the month is that Congress has to act by.
Let me ask you a slightly, what might be to you an uncomfortable question. There are a ton of current and future Louisiana retirees impacted by weapon GPO. The Speaker of the House and the House Majority Leader, that's the Speaker Johnson and Majority Leader Scalise, come from Louisiana. You're the prime sponsor of H.R. 82. Why has it been so difficult to get your bill to the floor this year?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And look, I don't view it as uncomfortable at all. Look, here's the thing. You know, Bob, if this was easy, this would have been done 40 years ago. That's the reality. This is complex. It's expensive. Finding the, quote, the fair formula to address this, you know, because as I said, that we have not asked for all of the back pay that I could make a really good argument for. But look, I got to tell you, I've got to give some, and this may seem strange, but I've got to give some accolades to the chair of the committee, Jason Smith, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, has jurisdiction over this. Give accolades to Richie Neal, the ranking member of the committee, because we have been working for months and months now. And I'll tell you, I told them at the beginning of this Congress, friends of mine, but I said, look, I want to be clear. We're friends, but I also want to be crystal clear to you. We are gonna be dealt with. You are going to deal with our bill one way or another this year, and I certainly would prefer if it were done on a cooperative basis. So we sat there for months and tried to negotiate, and there were good faith negotiations with offers passed back and forth. But at the end of the day, we just couldn't get to the point to where there was an offer that we thought was fair. And so while this may seem like it's an affront and an offense, you know, to some of those folks, that the chair of the committee and the ranking member, that's not how I look at it. We set a date, Congressman Spanberger and I, on a bipartisan basis, set a date and said, if we do not have a deal by this date, then we certainly are not going to squander this Congress and this opportunity with all the co-sponsors. We're going to move this bill forward, which is exactly what the discharge petition is about. We have hit our internal date. And so we are taking the step that effectively will force this bill before a vote on the House floor.
So the process for the discharge petition is when you get back to Washington next week, you're going to initiate the solicitation for the petition, for the signatures on the petition. How do you expect this to play out?
Well, so just to be clear, it's a pretty weedy process, but just to summarize it, on Tuesday, September 10th, we will be filing the paperwork that opens sort of the door to beginning the signature process. We need to recruit 218 signatures out of the 435 members of the House. And just to remind you, we have 325 co-sponsors. So there's a big list and a good bit of cushion. So we're going to have to make a big sort of education or communications push with these members of Congress. We're going to have to get those members to sign the discharge petition. Once we hit our 218, then basically a clock starts ticking, and the bill will have to go before go for a vote before the full House within just a few weeks of us hitting that number. So the sooner we do that, the sooner we hit the 218 signatures, the sooner this bill goes for a vote before the full House, the sooner we get it over to the Senate, where there's building support for this effort, and the sooner we're able to get it over to the White House for signature and fix this thing once and for all.
As I mentioned earlier, we are at NAPS have initiated an online electronic communication with our members of Congress to get to that 218 as soon as possible. But besides that, what should our listeners do to encourage co-sponsors to sign on to the discharge petition?
Look, let's keep in mind there's a lot of noise out there right now. We've got major presidential elections underway. You've got major House and Senate elections underway. You've got controversial things going on all over the globe. And I think the most important thing is trying to break through the noise, get to different members of Congress and to their offices, making them aware that this is going on, that this discharge petition is being filed, that we need to get our 218 signatures absolutely as fast as we can to where that timer starts ticking to force this for a vote before the House, because the sooner we can get this bill over to the United States Senate for a vote, the better chance we've got it at fixing this thing once and for all.
Let me ask one last question. Taking note of the old adage, we may have to wait till next year if the clock runs out on us, and hopefully it won't. But if that happens, and with both you and Representative Spanberger departing the House at the end of this congressional session, who do you think will take up the mantle of leadership in repealing GPO and WEP?
Yeah, well, look, I want to be clear. I'm not looking at Plan Bs right now. Our strategy is to get this thing done. I think that we are in the absolute best position in the 40-plus year history of this effort. We are in the best, most powerful position we have ever been in to get this done. And I don't want to start thinking about what ifs. I want all of our energy, all of our focus to be on getting this across the goal line this year, because right now is when we have the momentum. Right now is when we have the leverage, and I want to make sure that we use every single angle, every single strategy possible to try to maximize where we are and get this done and fix this injustice.
From your mouth to God's ears. Well, I want to thank Representative Garrett Graves, the champion of WEP GPO repeal, for joining us this week on NAPS Chat. Thanks, Congressman Graves.
Hey, Bob, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the podcast store of your preference. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to stand right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna